Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the Acrow FY 2022 results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a question and answer session after the presentation, at which time, if you wish to queue for a question, you will need to press zero followed by one on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. I would now like to hand the call over to Mr. Steven Boland, Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thanks folks for joining us this morning as we walk through our FY 2022 investor presentation. Clearly this is a great year for the company, a year I'm extremely proud of all the efforts of all of the Acrow team in delivering the results that we're reporting today. I think it really is a watershed year in the history of the business as we've, you know, totally transformed this business over the last five years since we've become a public company, and I'll give some details in relation to that shortly. In this year, we're reporting record financial results in basically all areas. The growth that we're seeing is all organic growth. It's not off the back of any M&A activity in the last actually only three years now. We have a record pipeline of work in front of us. We've also had a fantastic year in securing high revenue contracts, and we'll talk through a bit more detail around that. Very pleasingly for me, we're getting great growth basically across all states and all markets. We are forecasting another very, very strong year in FY 2023, and I'll give some color around that towards the end of the presentation. I thought it was appropriate to, you know, a number of people I think will be on the call today will have been shareholders of Acrow since we listed in April of 2018. I just, I guess, a little bit of a step through lesson of where we've come to over that period, 'cause the business that your shareholders of today is a very, very different business to what it was when we listed in April of 2018. I just wanted to put some, you know, some information around that to show just how this business has been transformed. Firstly, clearly from a revenue and a profitability perspective, EBITDA perspective, we've basically doubled, you know, 2.5x the number of the revenue and the EBITDA, and we're heading towards tripling those numbers in Acrow since listing. Very importantly, we've created, you know, we are now creating excellent value for our shareholders with, you know, the EPS now 0.072 per share this year, heading into the 0.08. You know, you see we've had 57% CAGR on EPS over that period. That's very good for us to see that we're creating that value for our shareholders. The key driving factor over this period has been that we've changed the focus of the business to being, you know, an engineering solutions-based business rather than basically a provider of scaffold services. You can see over the five years or from full year 2018 to full year 2022, we've now got 87.8% of our sales contribution margin coming out of engineering services, so effectively formwork and industrial engineering, industrial services, which was only 50% four years ago. The scaffold business now, it's pure commercial scaffold business in Acrow now represents just over 12% of our total sales contribution. I think also pleasingly for myself and the management team and our board is that, in a period of such significant growth over four years of, you know, going, you know, going 250% increase in your revenue, basically, we've increased our margins. We're not buying revenue for revenue's sake. The margins in the business have gone from 20.2%-24.5% EBITDA margin. 24.5% EBITDA margin is a very healthy position for the business to be in. You know, we focus very much on continuing the growth of that number as we go forward. I'll quickly just, you know, touch on the overview. I'm sure most of you know this story, but, you know, the business now is a construction services business that focuses on civil infrastructure, the industrial markets and the commercial markets. Our distinct offering is to provide engineered formwork sales and hire service, firstly. We have a specialist screen, edge protection screen system solutions business. We provide hire of equipment, labor, and sale of equipment into the industrial market, and we still provide scaffold dry hire to the commercial sector. We are a national business. We have 10 locations, operate in all states, all capital cities, and we have a very clear growth strategy to broaden the footprint of our civil infrastructure business across the East Coast. especially in New South Wales, Victoria. I'll talk a bit about New South Wales because it's been a laggard for us for some time, and I've been saying that's going to change, and it is now significantly changing. And we also have a very strong desire to grow a national footprint in industrial services. We operate primarily in Queensland and New South Wales in that sector at the moment. We've got a very strong eye on certainly South Australia and Western Australia. In terms of our competitive advantages, and we're really honing in on these, number one is the expertise and basically customer focus of our engineering team, which we know is industry leading, by far industry leading. I'll talk a bit about that in more detail shortly. The general quality of our people is something we've worked on a lot over the last 4 years in terms of succession planning and just the general depth of staff. Again, I'll talk about that in a bit more detail later. I sort of guard jealously the position that we've got to in terms of the range of products that we have and the geographic footprints that we operate in. There's no company in our markets in Australia who operate across the geographies with the range of products that we do. So we've really become a best of breed hirer and seller of formwork and industrial scaffold equipment right across Australia. In terms of the financial metrics for this year, so, you know, clearly a very strong year, revenue up 40%, EBITDA up 49%. Importantly, and I think we've been talking about this for some time, we were saying we were going to start to see the scale impacts coming through our NPAT, not just underlying, but also statutory NPAT, and that's evident now in this year with underlying NPAT up by 104%, statutory NPAT up nearly 300%. So, you know, we had to get to that point of scale. That scale has now been achieved, and those numbers will now continue to grow in line with our projected EBITDA and revenue growth. Again, importantly, EPS, 79% growth to 7.2 cents, and continue to head north, forecast to go us into the eights in the new year. We are declaring a 1.5 cent final dividend for the year, 60% franked, leading to a total dividend for the year of 2.7 cents per share. So, you know, we in a business as growing as we do and still, you know, spending a lot of money, investing money into the growth of the business with very high returns, we still believe it's a very important discipline factor to be paying dividends, and we're pleased. I mean, this is the biggest dividend that we've paid for a full year in the company's history. And again, given the growth and the investment in growth in the company, our return on equity going from 14.5% to 23%, I think is a strong indicator that we're very well manage our growth, and we're a good capital manager. And Andrew Crowther, our CFO, will give more detail later about the sort of the return rates that we're achieving for our capital growth. In terms of the achievements for the year, the first one there, our hire contract, continues to be, and we watch this almost every day, every week, about the number of new contracts we're securing, the value of those contracts. It is the most important key lead indicator to the future success of the business, up 28% this year compared to last year. This gives me real transparency for at least 6 months, if not almost a full year, around what our high revenue is going to look like. And we're off to a cracking start in the new year. I'll talk about that a bit later. I mentioned earlier organic growth, and I'll sort of talk about that in line with the point that's underneath it about WASA and Tasmania, because it's really where that we've seen that our smaller states. It's hard to call WA now a smaller state because the profitability of that business now this year has been quite remarkable. But we've been able to move products into those markets that have previously not been seen due to our product range, open up new channels for revenue, and all three of those businesses have had fantastic results across the year. Our major growth success story this year has been industrial services. So we put a lot of effort in and a degree of capital into this market. It does give us a repeatable earnings profile that the rest of our business is more sort of project-to-project based, but we're very keen to grow further our industrial services business that will give us that strong repeatable earnings. So, yeah, we grow the revenue by 110% up to $45.6 million. And sales contribution up by 53%. Queensland Formwork has been our strongest business for some time, and you know, this time last year I was saying we were going to get a significant increase in Queensland Formwork in the FY22 year off the back of activity and to some degree of market share growth, and that has absolutely happened. So really proud of our Queensland formwork business. It continues to be the market leader up there by a long, long way. I'd say our market share is probably in the 60 to 70 range now in Queensland formwork. And finally, supply chain and logistics. We haven't been immune from the challenges that companies have been facing with due to COVID, geopolitical situations, et cetera, in terms of supply chain and logistics issues. We've taken some really strong initiatives to minimise those impacts. One of the major things, again, Andrew will talk in more detail about that, has been our ability to open up a channel of supply for timber and plywood products that a lot of other companies in Australia have not been able to do. So we've opened up a very, very good supply channel there, and that's enabled us to both grow our revenue and significantly grow our margins in the sale of timber and plywood products into formwork operators in Australia. In terms of our safety results, good improvements, with 23% improvement in terms of our TRIFR stat, 49% improvement in our LTIFR stat, lost time injuries. You see there's not many of them, but 6 down to 4. The total recordable injuries number with being flat, I'm okay with that because it just means we're reporting more, we're reporting things better, and we can take corrective action if we need to. Clearly zero is the goal, but in a business of our nature, still they have only 4 LTIs across the year is a reasonably good result. Talking about the market and the market we operate in and the general business overview. So, we are very heavily focused on the transport infrastructure pipeline in the country. There has been a 30% growth in spend in transport infrastructure between 20 and 22. You can see on this chart how that's forecast to peak in 23, 24, 25. It won't happen, so there's many times. This will be a longer and flatter peak, which is good for us. The availability of labour, availability of equipment to be able to provide this kind of peak just won't happen. I think it's well publicised the range of major transport infrastructure projects that are taking longer and costing more. That's not bad news for ACRO. And you can see on the right-hand side of this page, every one of the major transport infrastructure projects in the country are now significant contributors to revenue and profit for ACRO. The rail projects in Melbourne, Brisbane and Sydney, the Bruce Highway project in Queensland, the Western Distributor project in Melbourne. And as these projects are coming towards, and some of them are not yet coming towards the conclusion, but as they are getting more towards the conclusion, they are being replaced by other projects. So the pipeline for us here is extremely strong. And it's a factor here that once you get on these projects, and Melbourne Metro Rail is a prime example because we had very little market share in Melbourne. This is one of the great sort of stimuluses for us to get cracking in Melbourne was this project. Once you get on the project and you provide the right solutions and the right customer service and the right engineering support with the right equipment, it's very, very hard to get you off them. So we are winning 80% of the packages that we're tendering for on Melbourne Metro Rail at the moment, it just continues to roll on. So, we've got ourselves in a really good space when it comes to the transport infrastructure projects in the country. And off the back of that, I've talked about a 30% growth in spend in civil infrastructure between 20 and 22. Over the same period, we've grown by 56% in that area. And look, the states, it's interesting now to talk through what's happening in each of these states, and I've added WA here now, as you can see, it's quite a story as well. Queensland has gone from 20 million to 30 million in a year, so 50% increase in revenue formwork in Queensland. We predicted that would happen, and it's happened. And that's not just in terms of activity, but we've definitely, I believe, in some factors, picked up some market share. Victoria, if I went back to 18 and 19, we were lucky to have, I think we had $2 million or $3 million in revenue in Victoria up to now 15. So we've maintaining our position of growth that we've now had in Victoria between the sort of the 18, 19 low points, and the real growth we got in 21 was maintained in 22. WA in the bottom right-hand corner added in for the first time because, again, it's quite a story. WA going from $5.2 million to nearly $9 million of revenue over the course of the year. Very, very profitable branch for us now, and the prospects for WA going forward are very good for us. New South Wales is the interesting one. So whilst, again, that looks like, it went from 10 to 12 to 13, not enormous amount of growth, but we've just come off in the month of July, the most profitable month the New South Wales branch has had in over 8 years, and that's just going to improve off the back of projects that we have now won. So, you know, this time last year I was saying that you'll see real growth out of Queensland between 21 and 22. This year I'm saying 22 to 23 for New South Wales formwork is going to look extremely good. Hire equipment wins for the year, up 28.4%, $39 million to $50 million. So important that that continues to roll. Like I mentioned, we're off to a cracking start in 23. The month of August, we're still got a week to go, is the biggest month in terms of contract value won in the history of ACRO. We'll be up towards $8 million just in a month, in the month of August in terms of contracts won. The pipeline is also very strong, up 14% from where it was same time last year. 87% of the value in the pipeline is in formwork. We are winning now pretty much one in two formwork contracts that we bid on. We mentioned the strong organic growth in the smaller states. And in the commercial scaffold area, we're actually going to see some gains this year as prices are for the first time in probably 5 years moving upwards. The most important initiative in this business over the last 4.5 years has been to focus on the engineered systems and services and to resource our engineering department and upskill our engineering department to deliver this kind of result. You can see on the left-hand side, 84% of the revenue in the business comes out of engineered systems and services compared to 43% four years ago. Doubled the number of engineers in the business, 15 to 32. We're about to put a couple of extra engineers on again. It's in specific areas, primarily for our jump form business. I'll talk about that shortly. This enables us to make a real differentiation because we've got an engineering team that are absolutely focused on delivering results to customers. It's a can-do, will-do, how do we make this work in a safe, cost-effective way for customers. So that gives us, so we've now got a very strong reputation around product quality and safety. And the benefits of this whole structure is that we get significant exposure to government-funded civil infrastructure projects and significant amount of our revenue that comes out of this space, and there's a great tailwind in that area. Pricing is not even close to being the first focus on these projects. And importantly, in an era where, and there's been a lot of publicity about issues with companies sailing close to the wind in the construction sector, the quality of the debtors in this area on government-funded projects, significantly different profile than if you're involved in the residential housing market. Marquee civil project, I talked a little bit about those earlier, but I can talk about the Snowy Hydro. We got $8.3 million of revenue out of Snowy Hydro. It's only in its infancy. I mean, we put a number in there and we expect there to be $30 million. It could be two or three times that amount for us over the next 5 to 10 years. Again, been a lot of publicity about this particular project in terms of cost blowouts and delays, and they're true. It's absolutely true. This is a troubled project. But it's going ahead, and it has to go ahead. It's absolutely cornerstone to the national power generation. We know what's going on the ground, there's no doubt it's going to be costing more ultimately to the federal government than originally planned. But the project's going ahead, and it's going to go ahead at some pace. Melbourne Metro Tunnel, we talked about. You can see $12 million going to $16 million. We expect for the duration of the project, we think we've got double the revenue still to go on Bruce Highway, 9 to 18. Westgate is getting closer to completion. Cross River for us is still very much in its infancy. And Sydney Metro, and the existing Sydney Metro, is getting close to completion. However, Sydney Metro West, and then Sydney Metro Inner West, and Sydney Metro West will be kicking in the next 6 to 12 months. In terms of operational update, now a segmental breakdown, 40% increase in revenue, all organic as mentioned before, pretty much across all divisions and all states. In terms of revenue, you can see industrial services growing from $22 million to $45.6 million is the standout. In terms of sales contribution margin though, formwork is the standout, growing 36%, whilst industrial services is 53%, but $14.7 million in formwork growth for the year. Flat and commercial scaffold. Contribution margin, this is purely a mix issue. If our higher revenue is 100% pass-through from revenue to sales contribution, our labour revenue is around about 19%, and our sale of product revenue is around about 25%. So depending on the mix at any given time, you're going to get a change there. For example, in the month of July, our sales contribution margin was 60%, just for that month, because of the mix of work in that particular month. Really importantly for us is the sales contribution growth of $20 million, $12 million of that found its way through to the bottom line. So you clearly can't grow a business to this nature as we have, 40% up in revenue, without having growth in some of your cost lines. And we're taking a view at the moment. We're setting this business up to not be a $150 million turnover business. We're setting this business up to be a $200 or $250 million turnover business in the coming years with a staffing structure that supports a business of that size. And I'll talk a bit about some of the new roles we put into the business shortly that just are as much to do with the future as they are to do with today. But, you know, I'm very happy to see basically 60% of the growth of our sales contribution falling through to the EBITDA of the business. The next sales contribution bridge, again, shows where we're getting our gains. So formwork hire, industrial scaffold hire, industrial services labour hire, those three, which total $15.3 million of our sales contribution growth. A lot of that's where our capital investment's going. Our capital investment has been going into formwork products and has been going into industrial services products. And that $15.3 million of growth is a lot to do off the back of the capital expenditure in those areas. The other one I want to point out on that page, and again, Andrew will talk more about this later, is our timber sales. So we had $2.7 million of sales contribution growth out of our sale of timber and plywood this year. The numbers we're doing now, I could never have imagined were possible even 12 months or 18 months or 2 years ago. A lot of factors off the back of that. Again, I won't steal Andrew's thunder. He will go through that. It does come at a cost of working capital, but it's really high return on investment for the working capital employed to generate the margin growth that we're getting out of timber. Divisional report, so formwork, 30% growth in revenue, 37% growth in formwork hire. As I mentioned earlier, great contributions primarily out of Queensland and Western Australia, up 50 and 69% respectively, and the growth of the timber and plywood, which has driven the 26% growth in revenue, 32% growth in contribution in sales. A lot of that's come out of timber and ply. This is a consistent growth in this business for us over the last 4 years. It's not going to be stopping anytime soon. I won't go into infinite detail about all of the case studies here. What I will point out is the first three case studies, which is a Melbourne Metro Tunnel project, a Brisbane Cross River Rail project, and the Sydney Rozelle Interchange project, it's all the same equipment. So it's basically all of our MK equipment, all of the same equipment, but being used in different applications. So it goes to the versatility of the products, the engineering smarts to the products. But I think that's the main thing I want to point out here. It's one thing to have the equipment, but it's another thing to know how to use the equipment to come up with the best solution for your customer. And that's what our guys are able to do. And all three of those projects, and if you look at those, they all look very different applications, and they are, but it's all using basically the same equipment in a different application. The last case study, which is a screens project, white residences on the Gold Coast. I wanted to highlight this again because it goes again to the versatility of the project. This was not an easy job for a screens business to undertake. But all that equipment is hydraulically lifted. We had to build some absolute specific stair systems and stretcher stair systems for this project. And I guess 3 or 4 years ago, we'd have said no to this, that kind of project. Today, we find a way to make it work and make it work incredibly profitably for us and provide the right solution for the customer. Moving on to industrial services. It is the real success story of the year in terms of revenue growth. Revenue up 110%. You can see very high growth in labour hire, which is off the back of the major contracts we've been winning with Visy, Snowy Hydro, the Mount Piper Power Station, further contracts on Origin, Surat Basin and Intertech Pivot. The really important thing about this business is it gives us an annuity earnings profile. So Busy's a 5-year contract. Origin and Surat Basin's a 5-year contract with some further extensions added to it. The Snowy Hydro project, we basically run from 6 to 6 months. You get an order for 6 months, you get another order for another 6 months, you get another order for another 6 months. will be there for a long period of time. That contract will be generating significant revenue in the industrial space for us for at least the next 2 to 3 years, and then it converts to a formwork project when it really gets into the heavy tunneling part of the project. It's not at that point, anywhere near that point yet. We have invested $4 million in specialised industrial services equipment over the period. The next page is an example of that. And really, it's been our preparedness to invest in this absolute specialist kit that's highly engineered. You can see, I mean, we can't actually provide a photo. We're not allowed to take a photo inside the furnace at Mount Piper, but this is a schematic of what it looks like. So if you can imagine, again, you know, the work that needs to be done to clean and maintain a furnace inside a power station, it's you know, very specific nature of work. And we've got equipment that is designed in such a way to enable that work to be carried out. It was an R&D project for us to start with. It then turns into a capital investment, and we make very, very strong returns out of this. And it's been one of the major differences in enabling us to crack into this market in New South Wales as we have. And then finally, commercial scaffolding. I won't talk a lot about this. You can see the contribution margin is basically flat for the year. What I will say is we continue to exit from scaffold with higher contracts. The margins are getting ridiculously low on those in terms of the labour. We don't want to play in that space. We still had, by December of this year, I think we'll have 3 contracts nationally, down from probably 10 or 12 still at the moment. But the other thing that's really happening at the moment is improvement in price on the dry hire. So we're certainly seeing price lift as we speak right now. And I expect to see actually some revenue, well, the equipment hire revenue number will go up between 22 and 23 off the back of price increase. People at Acrow are so important to what we do. Clearly, in any very, very good business, you've got to have high-quality people, and we do. We focus a lot on succession planning. I've spoken about this a fair bit in the past. It's absolutely front of mind for us now. We've been very fortunate to attract some very high-quality people into the business. Given some examples there of our new New South Wales GM, Peter Fehrenbach. You know, Peter's been with the business now 7 or 8 months, and the month of July, well, actually not even going towards 12 months, I guess, now with Peter. And the month of July is the most profitable month in the history of the business in New South Wales. Evan Field, our new National Engineering Manager, is actually in the photo there wearing the orange vest. Basically wound up his own business as an engineering consultant to come and work for us. Rob Parabell, very, very experienced HR guy in the business. And just as importantly, internal promotions of Matt Caparella, Yuri Rodiger and Jason Majander are very important parts of the business. I mean, Matt, who was our National Engineering Manager, is now the Chief Operating Officer in the business and does an absolutely tremendous job. Importantly, though, I've focused on the senior team there. We've done a lot of work on the middle management over the last 6 to 12 months. So, in the last few months, I mean, we've hired a new National Credit Manager, which was off the back of the retirement of our existing guy who was a stalwart in the business. But we've got a really good National Credit Manager coming into the business. But we've created some new roles. In a business that needs to manage its cash as tightly as we do because of our investment profile, we've now got a company treasurer. It's been a breath of fresh air having somebody in that role who reports into Andrew, our CFO, but very talented young guy who has taken basically control of the cash management of the business, and it's a vital part of the way we operate our business. Importantly too, working for Rob Parabell, we've just hired a training and development manager to focus on succession planning and training. So we haven't had that role in the business, but we've now got an experienced gentleman coming into the business who will manage the training and development of all staff, from senior staff, from basically, you know, chief operating officer and senior state general managers right through to the guys that are working in our yard operations. So I think it's a really very good initiative for the business. In terms of the culture, all these things are obviously important, that safety, customer focus, solutions focus, being an employer of choice. We believe in exceeding industry standards and then setting new standards, having a very open communication. But one thing that's not mentioned there, and I will mention it because I don't want to ever shy away of it, we have an absolute culture of bottom line focus. So we don't do it to the detriment of safety. We don't do it to the detriment of customer. But this business is very, very focused on its profitability almost on a daily basis. The guys in the business can tell you we run 12 grand finals every year. So at the end of each month, it's a grand final. How do we go? Do we win or we lose? the end of June is the Super Bowl. That's why we talk about it internally. So, you know, we really are very focused on our profitability, but not to the detriment of safety or customers or employees. I'll now hand over to Andrew, who will walk you through all the financials, and then I'll come back at the end and give you sort of the outlook of the FY23 year.
Great. Thanks, Steve, and thanks again for joining us today. Move over to the P&L slide. As Steve mentioned before, it's the last 3 years has been a massive growth for us. We've spent $32.5 million of growth capex in the last 3 years. We've acquired Unispan and NatForm, and also we've moved strategically to engineered systems. And what you can see now, that's allowed us to achieve a scale of growth that we've talked about in the past, that now sees us having 79% of our EBITDA growth flowing directly through to pre-tax profit. So as Steve already mentioned, our EBITDA has increased 49% up to $36.3 million. Now, below that, we've got depreciation that's increased almost $2 million, which is obviously part of the CapEx growth that we've had. Net interest has increased basically because our volume of debt has gone up, which we'll move on to in a second, up by about 41% on an average yearly growth. Pre-tax profit, $10 million up to almost $20 million. Now, our tax expense has gone from $1.5 million last year to almost $2 million this year, but that's also come with a decrease of the effective tax rate from 15% down to 10%. Now, as you would remember, we have quite a lot of tax losses that we carry forward. We have 11.2 million still of tax affected losses that are going forward, which translates to about 37 million of profit that can go against those tax losses. Now, we've been very profitable this year, and the reality is this: we've probably got another 3 to 4 years of those tax losses to be able to use. That's a pretty good benefit to carry forward. From a below, so that gets us down to NPAT underlying, an increase of 104% from 8.7 million to 17.8 million. And then after significant items and share-based payments, which were much lower this year than last year, we get to an increase of almost 300% of NPAT report, of statutory NPAT up to 15.7 million. Now, from an EPS underlying, that gets us from 4 cents last year to 7.17 cents. Now, it's also important to remember that we made a $10.5 million capital raise in July. So that 7.17 or 79% increase in EPS comes with a 14% increase in our actual shares, weighted shares on issue. So that's a pretty good outcome. And as Steve mentioned before, as part of this announcement, we made a final dividend announcement of 1.5 cents, which is 60% franked. Ongoing, that will move towards 100% as we get into a tax payable position. So 1.5 cents, when you add on the 1.2 cents of that were 20% franked at the interim, that gives us 2.7 cents for the year, which was 42% franked. That's up from 1.9 cents in the previous year. Now, when you take into account what's happened to our share price from the end of last year to this year, plus that good dividend yield, that's about almost a 42% total shareholder return for the year. Moving on to the balance sheet, you can see that this balance sheet is a very different balance sheet than what you would have seen last year. So it's a very strong balance sheet. We had an $11 million improvement in our net current asset situation. Last year, you remember, we had an $8 million deficit in net current assets. This year, we have a $3 million surplus. Obviously, we've talked about the growth of the company in the last year and the very profitable position we're in. That obviously comes with a cost of either debt, equity, and generated cash. So our net debt during the year went up by $10.4 million. Now that supported the $21.1 million of CapEx, the expanded sales and industrial services labor business, and also we paid the last deferred payment for the Unispan acquisition. Our net gearing went up to 28.3%, which was up by 1.5%. Now that's a pretty small increase given the fact of how much we've grown and our debt growth. Our debt to EBITDA actually reduced from 1.2 down to 1.1, which is just our growth of EBITDA and the use and the effective use of the capital of what we've paid for. Our intention is that this balance sheet and the gearing will remain pretty conservative, and we see that there will be an increase during the year, but by the end of the year, that will be lower. And as we go on and the profits and the cash keep on turning out and our CapEx becomes more conservative, that will reduce relatively rapidly. Now, one of the big things we've had, and Steve went on before, we had a rebase of a couple of our businesses during the year. Our sales business, and in particular our timber business, grew rapidly. So sales overall was up about 42%, and our industrial labour business increased by about 156% during the year. Now that comes with a very large working capital impost. So working capital, being debtors, prepayments, inventory less creditors, went up by $20 million. Now that's a pretty big one-off hit for the year, but as we'll see in a moment, as you can see from the EBITDA growth, that actually was a worthwhile growth. We also had, as Steve mentioned before, it was an unprecedented year from supply chain issues. So a lot of our creditors bought in payment terms and so forth, and in particular, the timber paid payment terms, which I'll get into in a moment, required a lot of additional working capital. As I always said, you'll see the one of the payments we made this year was the Unispan deferred payment of $3.5 million. That was our last deferred payment for that acquisition. And going forward, that's all gone now. Moving over to the next page, funding and liquidity. Now, as I said before, one of the three ways you grow is obviously debt. And at the moment, even with the increases in interest rates, even though we want to keep a very conservative look on gearing, debt for us is still relatively cheap. So we're very lucky that we've got very, very good banking partners, being Westpac, that have supported us during the last few years. And in particular this year, they've supported us very closely. Our gross debt capacity has gone from $31.1 million to $46.1 million. And with that, our actual headroom has increased by 8.6 to $13.2 million. So we've got a lot of headroom to support further growth. And as I said before, our actual net gearing has gone from 26.1 to 28.3%, so relatively conservative. And our debt to EBITDA has reduced, as well as our interest cover has actually increased. So it's a pretty good position to be at. And we actually, as I said before, we expect our debt ratios to improve during the 23 year. Now over to the slide 35. This is during the year, we had a very large timber business rebase. Timber for us in the past years was more of a service to our customers, where we provided timber because the customers basically expected it. But going back a few years, the margins we'd achieve on these things on timber was about 10 to 11%, so pretty low, and it was actually a bit more of a pain than anything to actually do it, just a service. What we found this year, you would have seen, anyone that knows landscape gardens or builders know there's an absolute lack of supply of timber around. There's a growing Australian demand for this, and also along with the same time, there's been a lot of Australian suppliers of timber that have pulled out of the market. So basically, people just can't access supply. ACRO, during this period, has managed to secure very reliable supply from overseas of LVL and plywood. And not just that, we've actually been able to secure this at much higher margins. So you'll see this year, we made a contribution margin of $4 million on our timber business at a 28% margin. Last year, there was $1.3 million of contributions at an 18% margin. And as I said previously, that was more 10 to 11. But with timber comes a very high impost on working capital. So we have to pay a deposit when we order, and we have to pay the full amount of this timber as it hits Australian docks. And if you take into account our debtors, there's basically a 4 to 5 month lag on payment. So there's an impost of around $5 million of working capital requirements. But if you think about it, sales contribution of $4 million, and a $5 million working capital impost, that's a pretty good return on investment that we're very happy to continue going. Moving over to the next page, cash flow. Our cash operating profit during the year increased from 11.7 million last year up to 23 million this year. So that's a 76% increase. Very minimal tax paid this year, although those tax payments will start increasing in the following year. If we move down to the net cash bridge, what we're trying to show here is that this year was a big growth year for a number of reasons, both for CapEx and both for working capital and the rebases of our industrial services, labour business and our sales business. So we had EBITDA of 36.3. We had working capital impost of about $20 million. That $20 million is a one-off hit. You know, we will continue. We're currently at working capital. We've got about, this year we're at about a 22% working capital to sales. The previous year was about 12.5%. Now, that was too low. We see this moving back to about 18 to 20% of sales. So what you'll find next year is working capital will likely increase as our business increases, but it will be a much lower impost on cash usage. Now, moving over to the right, you'll see it was a big investment year as well. We had $21.1 million of CapEx, plus the $3.5 million of Unispan deferred payment. And that, as you can see, if you actually move left to right, our net debt went from 22.45 to 32.84. However, a large reason for that was the working capital of 20 and the CapEx of 21.1. As I said, the working capital won't repeat itself. And at any stage, we can sort of move that CapEx spend down. And as you can see, this business will start really shoving cash off very quickly once we hit peak CapEx. Now, from a cash conversion point of view, likewise, the cash conversion this year was just about 52%. But the reason for that was the working capital impost of those two businesses. Last year, it was 96%. We can see that moving to 90% in the following years. Moving over to capital expenditure. As we said, this year was a relatively high amount of CapEx, $21.1 million, of which $14.2 million was growth and $6.2 million stay in business. Now, as Steve mentioned before, this CapEx is actually going into the investment where our growth is, so mainly the formwork and into the industrial services business. Interestingly, that $21.1 million is up from $16.2 last year, but it's a lower percentage of both our EBITDA and sales from last year. So even though it's a larger amount, it's a smaller amount as a percentage. Now, we did a review of what our return on investment is. And as you know, we've been talking about our IRR return requirement is 40% for all of our growth CapEx. We did a review of the 21 and 22 year because these 2 years were very clean from the fact that there's no M&A from the previous years involved in this. 2021 cumulative return on our growth CapEx was 43.5%. 2022 was 49.8%. So the actual hurdle rate is being exceeded by our growth CapEx. And we expect to see this improve as utilisation, et cetera, improves. With that, I will hand back over to Steve.
Thanks, Andrew. So just in terms of our short to medium term prospects and forecast into the new year, we will continue to grow our industrial services business. We are looking at M&A opportunities. There's nothing to report and nothing that's specific there at the moment, but we're seriously looking at opportunities in this space that consists of getting the South Australian, West Australian markets. We will see an uplift in New South Wales formwork. I mentioned that earlier. There's no doubt in this year we will. I mentioned Snowy 2.0, Sydney Gateway, Sydney Metro West. Just on Sydney Gateway alone, in the last 2 months, we've won $1.5 million worth of higher revenue contracts just on that project alone. So we're definitely going to see an uplift. Queensland formwork will have another very, very strong year. Cross River Rail, Bruce Highway, Inland Rail hasn't even started yet. It's going to be a great project for us. We'll continue to drive organic growth of formwork products into the smaller states, WA, SA and TAS. Integrated engineering services are new development for us. So off the back of hiring Evan Field as our National Engineering Manager, being an ex-consultant engineer, we're now moving towards becoming a full service provider to our customers in not just the products that we provide, but the other engineering services they require. So we're now charging significant amount of money. Well, so we're starting, it's good revenue now for us, and we're charging for engineering services. So I expect we'll see an uplift in engineering services charges for the year of somewhere in the vicinity of $1 million this year compared to last year. And finally, in Natform, I haven't mentioned Natform much at the moment, but Natform is actually our one division that had a reasonably soft year in FY22. It was the one division, especially in New South Wales, that was pretty heavily affected by COVID-based delays. But their pipeline of work that they won is tremendous. So this will be the strongest year of revenue in Natform FY23 that we've had since we purchased that business, off the back of already won work that's now starting off the, now that the COVID-based delays are getting resolved. The next one is important. It's like, as I said, the transformational investment. I mean, there's various ways you can grow your revenue. Number one, you can put your prices up, and in some cases we're doing that successfully. Secondly, you can get market share gains, such as we're now getting in New South Wales formwork, and we previously got Victorian formwork. You can ride the wave of an uplift in activity, as we are in Queensland to a large degree. Or, I think most importantly and sustainably, you can open up new channels for revenue and new adjacencies. And this is exactly what our Jumpform business will become. So we now have a 10-year licensing agreement to market the system, jacking systems product in Australia. You see a couple of photos there of previous users of this system. So this is the Crown Towers, a project in Sydney, probably the biggest or the biggest multi-level construction project in Sydney for some time. Jumpforms are basically the core of the buildings. They're the lift shafts and the stairwell. That's the core of the buildings. It's critical path. Jumpforms are a highly engineered part of the project. They're really important to the builder, the form worker. We've won our first two contracts. We announced this recently. Those contracts are on the Cross River Rail Albert Street Station in Brisbane, sorry, and the Monaco Gold Coast Apartment Development. $4 million of revenue. 90% of that revenue will be in hire, and all of the revenue and profit generated from these projects we're going to get in FY23. The return on investment, we believe, of Jumpforms as we go forward, it's going to be circa 70%. It's highly profitable technical work. Now, this is not an area that's unfamiliar to us. About 3.5 years ago, we almost bought a very large Jumpform business. We got to basically 2 days from settling, and the owner pulled out of it at the last minute. We're probably pretty happy that he did, to be honest, because his system is not as developed anywhere near as this one is. I'm confident that we can develop over the next 2.5 years a $20 million revenue stream, highly profitable, out of the Jumpform business nationally. We've just hired a national business development manager for the Jumpform business. Starts on the 12th of September. He comes from a competitor, a guy that we've known for some time, highly regarded, technically understands the system, and he'll be driving the growth of the business nationally. I mean, the only limiters really to us growing this business is, number one, how quickly do we want to do it from a capital investment perspective, and also just making sure on these first two projects we absolutely get it right. We know the service delivery is what our promise is what we deliver to the customer. And then really, I mean, this is a big market. This is a multi-hundred million dollar market in the country. And we believe in the next couple of years we'll be able to carve out a very nice slice of that for ourselves. In terms of our outlook, I'm really pleased to say that, you know, we will provide an outlook for our FY23 year. We're confident to do that, and of some of the factors I'll mention. So we're forecasting at the moment revenue growth of circa 15%, somewhere between 165 and 175. EBITDA growth of around 20%, into the sort of mid 43 to 44 range, and off the back of both of those, NPAT 23%, and EPS, as I said, heading into the eights, around 20%. So, you know, we're only 7 weeks into the new financial year, but we already have a good enough feeling for the business to be able to give this outlook with a high degree of confidence. The reasons we can do that, number one, is the $50.4 million of hire contracts we won last year, that was up 28%. And the first 2 months of 23, and we're not even finished August yet, we've won over $12 million of work. And in fact, that number is now 12.5 this morning. It'll be 13 by the time we finish the month. So for the first 2 months of the year, we've won $13 million of work. That's unprecedented in our business. And again, gives me that high degree of confidence around this outlook. A lot of the capital equipment that we ordered last year has only arrived at the very end of the last financial year. That gear is now out and in the field, generating revenue and profit. And finally, the revenue and profit from the Jumpform contracts, is now factored into this forecast. If clearly it wasn't there last year, it's a brand new adjacency and channel for us, and when I factor that revenue and profit into the forecasts, again, it gives us a high degree of confidence about the outlook we've provided. So that's it from us at the moment. Thanks very much, folks, for your attention. I hope you're pleased with the result. We certainly are, and we think just the future growth prospects for the business to be just as strong as they've been over the last 12 months or 24 months. So now I'll pass it back for any questions that we have.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to queue for a question, please slowly press 0 followed by 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. That is 0 followed by 1 on your telephone keypad. Thank you. Your first question is from the line of Alex Liu from Morgans. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Morning, Steve. Morning, Andrew. Hope you guys are well. Can I just start with FY23 guidance, please? And you've given quite specific guidance there, and you seem quite confident with the range. But I was just wondering, some of the factors that could influence whether you get to, say, the bottom or the top end of that range, and I guess things around, project timing, supply chain, equipment availability, et cetera. So just wondering if you could just make some comments around that, please.
We're 7 weeks into the year, Alex, I think is probably my first comment around that. We've got 45 weeks to go. So, last year we did 4 upgrades of our outlook from the first one we gave at around the same time. We did 4 upgrades over the course of the year. So I think that's the first comment around that. There's not a great factor around equipment availability dictating the forecast at the moment. Most of the forecast and the forecast that are driving this outlook, I can see out to January, February, March at the moment in terms of the one work. I mean, look, there could still be some project delay. I mean, that does happen. It certainly, as I said, happened in the Natform business last year off the back of COVID. That's now kicked in. Natform's had its best month in July for probably the last 12 months. But that can always be a factor. So that can dictate the top to the bottom end of the range. We really haven't factored into this forecast at the moment a lot of big product sales, which will only be an upside if they haven't. I think at the moment we're quite comfortable with what we've forecast. But I think the two things to answer your question specifically would be, will there be project delays? You never know. You just don't know, right? So that can happen at any time on any project for reasons that we don't know about. And secondly, again, we're 7 months into the year, so we've got a really good view of our. I mean, I've got higher revenue forecasts that go out to November that will be accurate to probably 95%.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful. And can I just talk about staffing, please? And obviously, your engineering team is very important, to what Acro does. But, given labour shortages and things like that, do you think you have enough engineers to service the amount of work that you have coming? And if not, how do you attract new engineers? And, I guess, how are you finding that process?
Yeah, very good question. So we are... you said we've doubled. We've got 32. In fact, that number's more like 35, 36 now with some of the trainees we're bringing on. So that is one answer. That we've got a really good traineeship program going now. But that's, again, that's probably for tomorrow rather than for today. But that's a way, we like to train our people up from the start while they're doing their degree. As part of their, like Matt Caparella, you've met Alex as a prime example. Matthew started with the business as a 21-year-old doing his degree. And 10 years later as chief operating officer. So that's the kind of progression that can happen through that program. But we've got some very specialised areas now that we're looking for. Jump form as an example. We're looking for a couple of experienced jump form engineers in the business. So one thing I'll say about the jump form business, for example, I'm factoring in that we're going to be winning those two contracts. We've won those two contracts. We'll be starting. I'm going to put about $500,000 of overhead straight into that business. I'm setting it up. We're setting it up as if it was 3 times that size to start with in terms of the staffing and support we're giving it to make sure we get it right. But look, there's no doubt that high-quality engineers are in high demand. It's also no doubt that we're becoming a very strong employer of choice in the formwork engineering areas, no doubt about that. And then thirdly, our traineeship program will deliver good results over time. It doesn't get you, obviously, qualified engineers today, but it's a really it's a strong initiative to make sure that our future is well protected.
Okay, that's it from me. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thank you. Your next question is from the line of Tina Wilson from EME Capital. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for taking my questions. I just wanted to ask about Jumpform. Appreciate you mentioned that, you're aiming for $20 million annualized revenue, but can you just talk about like how big the market opportunity is? Does that sort of double your current pipeline? Just some sort of context in terms of how much of the market does that open up for you would be really great.
Yeah, look, thank you. That's a good question. I think, as I mentioned earlier, we got very close to buying one of the largest Jumpform suppliers, New South Wales-based business, about 3 years ago. So we did a lot of research about that market at that time, and we liked it. Mm-hmm. It's highly profitable. Good. Now, that business makes great, very good margins, well-regarded. So we've learned a little bit about it at that time. But I think nationally, I would estimate that this market that's available to us, and because a lot of form workers will have their own system. For example, the photo here of the towers, the Crown Towers being developed, that form worker, who's a very big form worker in New South Wales, BKH, now has its own system. So you can't hire to them. But in the available hire market, look, it's probably a $200 to $300 million market nationally. So for us to say that we're seeking to carve out $20 million in the next 2.5 years I don't think it's a big ask. We've got a lot of our customers that we supply other services to already, other products, who've been asking us to get into the Jumpform business. So that's an ambition of only 10% market share.
Yep. And then do you get similar sort of competitors when you tender for that, for Jumpform, or you'll be meeting different competitors in that market?
Yeah, a bit of both. So there are some of our formwork competitors who have Jumpform systems. So the guys like Perry and Doka that we compete with pretty heavily, they have Jumpform systems. And then you've got the specialist companies. So there's this company that we almost bought 3 years ago who just do Jumpforms, nothing else. So it's a bit of both.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that is 0 followed by 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question is from the line of Stanley Holly. Please introduce your company. Thank you.
Morning, Steve. Thank you for taking my question. Would you be able to give us some context about the relationship with ULMA at the moment? Would you say that we'd be able to extend the exclusive contract that needs to be renewed by this November 2022? Thank you.
Yeah, we enjoy the relationship we have with ULMA at the moment. We're always looking for how that works for us in terms of the long, medium to long term. One of the things that we're looking to do in ACRO is become and we are doing it very, very strongly, is a best-in-breed supplier of formwork equipment across the country and across all product ranges. So I think it's fair to say that we don't want to necessarily have to tie ourselves into being, working with, we certainly want to work with ULMA and work with them as a supplier of equipment, but we've got a very, very strong research and development department, a very, very strong engineering team now that in some cases is actually designing specific products for ACRO. So I think to answer your question, it's important to have those relationships, but it's also fair to say that we're looking to broaden the horizon. I mean, the ACRO business to what it is today to what it was 4 years ago has grown up. So, we're now in a very unique situation in terms of supply to the Australian formwork market, and our real aim here now is to become, as I said, and we are becoming that very quickly, a best-in-breed supplier of a wide range of formwork equipment. It's not necessarily tied to one supplier.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. There are no questions at this point, Mr. Bolin. Please continue. Thank you.
Okay, so thanks very much, folks, for your attendance on the call today, and thanks for the questions. And you know, I hope that those of you who are of our shareholders continue to be pleased with the development of the business. We're certainly committed to providing quality returns to our shareholders, and we look forward to our annual general meeting, which will be sometime in November, most likely, and then we'll be obviously presenting our half-year results. Clearly, we'll be going out in September with our full audited accounts and our annual report, but you know, we don't think there'll be any material changes to the numbers that we presented today. So again, thanks for your attendance, and look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our teleconference for today. You may all disconnect. Thank you.